Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Welcome to Fansmanship.com podcast, episode 96. Today we have a special in-studio guest. We're sticking with the Cal Poly theme this spring. Last week we had Cal Poly defensive lineman Sullivan Groves in and to talk about the draft and what he has coming up. Today we have Cal Poly forward, senior forward, graduated recently, right? Or are you graduating in the fall?
Graduating in June.
In the spring,
yeah.
I mean? Yeah, okay. Chris Eversley is around. What's up, Chris?
Nothing much. Just, you know, enjoying the nice weather nowadays. You know, it's not too hot, not too cold. One of the reasons why I love the Central Coast.
Awesome, man. And if you want to, like, just get up, like, kind of close to that mic, that would be good, too. So what have the last few months been like? Let's go, like, after the tournament ended. Like, you know, you guys kind of come down off of, you know, the great run that you had, kind of the 4 or 5 game run.
Oh, yeah.
And what's that been like since then? Like finals for the fall, for the winter quarter, like happened during that run.
Yeah.
And then, so what's your life been like since then?
Well, when I first got back, it's, I had finals to make up. I had, you know, had to take an incomplete in a class and, you know, you got to scramble the first week of spring quarter to try to get that set up and everything. And,
to try to get those units because
exactly.
You're graduating.
Yeah.
In
so
June.
I needed those.
Yeah.
I needed those. I couldn't be playing any games around with the units, but, got that squared away. And, I can gladly say, I mean, because my internship is credit, no credit, so I technically have no more letter grades to get. So I'll be graduating college with a 3.0. You know, it's big for
that's
personally.
Great, man.
Yeah,
be average. That's
exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly.
I know my first few years of college, I definitely did not have a 3.0, and I had to bring it up at the end there.
Well, it's all about how you finish, right? We should know that from this season.
nice. Yeah. So you just have like a couple internships or one internship right now?
Yeah,
that you're just
one
doing
internship.
To finish.
Yeah, that's basically it. I'm working with the YMCA in town and a youth futsal coach, fourth graders, and the Rebels.
And, youth futsal.
Youth futsal, indoor soccer.
Okay. And are you like a soccer, like, do you pay attention to soccer? I've seen you at soccer games.
I play, yeah. I mean, I go to a lot of soccer games. I'm cool with a lot of guys and teams. And I played for a couple years when I was younger, too. So it was just a way for me to feel like I can, you know, kind of give back to the community right now, you know, just as just like a kind of a quick turnaround.
Yeah. Guys that are like 6'6" usually play goalie,
right,
or forward.
Exactly, something like that.
But when you're little, it probably doesn't. You're not 6'6".
Exactly. Not yet. I wasn't there.
So you've been working out then, trying to get ready for kind of the next step for you. Is that kind of what's happening right now?
Yeah, I'm on a what I like to call a strict workout regimen is what we like to call it. And Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I work out with Coach Fortier. I mean, he has like that, you know, NBA experience at being at Washington. He has that high major experience.
Yeah.
And Coach Kirby and I work out on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I'm getting, you know, the best of both worlds with shots and drills and conditioning. Like it's all top notch, you know, and combine that with some weights and then some open gyms. So, I mean, it comes out to like 2 days pretty much.
Yeah. So you're pretty toast at the end of the day then
with
your internship too.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's weird because it's like a combo 9 to 5, you know, cause you have all these different components. And then when you get home at the end of the day, I start to feel like my mom, cause she's going to sleep at like 8 o'clock. You know what I'm saying? So my dad's the same way. So I'm like, okay, I understand what y'all are talking about.
And I think that's a kind of a, once you have kids thing, we've been going to bed at 9, I think since the baby was born. Cause the baby goes down about 6:30 and she likes to wake up a few times throughout the night too. So
okay.
I'm sure that's something you get used to once you're working and all that. So you have plans then to continue playing. I mean, that's why you're working out, right?
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like for you? Like, what are, I mean, obviously you don't have a great picture for all your options yet,
right.
But you have an agent and mm-hmm. your plans are to play somewhere, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, basically I sat down, I chose an agency out of Chicago, Edge Sports. And my agent is Keith Kreider, and basically their office is literally 2 blocks away from my high school. And
yeah,
Coach Fortier knows he's known the vice president for, I mean, I don't know how many years. And then they actually met with Coach Lowry. Keith met with Coach Lowry from Coach Omar Lowry.
Omar,
those two guys, exactly.
He went up to San Jose, is that right?
Yeah, he was at San Jose State. And
Is he who recruited you?
Yeah, he's the reason I'm here, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, so he met with Keith in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago, probably for about 2 hours right before a Bucks game. And they sat down and they talked about it, and Omar said he felt good about it. And, you know, it took a couple of weeks, felt out a couple more options, and decided to go with them.
Okay. So you utilize, I mean, the people that you know, the contacts you've made, even if they're not still with Cal Poly.
Right. Of course. Yeah, I talked to Omar on, I mean, almost a daily basis, you know, just checking in, like, okay, how you doing? How you doing? Like this and that, this and that. So it's nice.
Yeah, cool. And you see, I imagine you see Calero around campus too. I mean, you're working out with Fortier and with Kirby, but you're seeing Joe around too, right?
Uh-huh. I mean, I stop in his office. I mean, that's a bond I don't feel like, you know, is ever going to change, you know, because it's like even in their season, you know, like even when I was playing here, it's like, okay, I can always stop in his office and we can talk about whatever. And like now, you know, I'll drop in a couple of days a week and, you know, we'll just sit there and talk about whatever, you know.
So just shoot the breeze.
Exactly. Yeah. Nice. I mean, most of the time we don't even talk about basketball, which is good, you know, because I've had enough long talks with him about basketball over the past 4 years.
Film
exactly.
Sessions.
Love nice. Enough long film sessions in his tiny office. So it's definitely a lot of fun.
Do you guys all crowd into his office for film sessions?
Oh yes,
the whole team.
Not the whole team, but we've had some good ones. We've had Jamal, Malik, Kyle, and myself, and him. So that's five people in a 3-chair room. So I mean, you have people sitting on the floor. You had people all over the place. But I mean, it was definitely worth it looking back at it, you know, because it paid off.
Nice. Now you said that Omar is the reason why you're here. Tell me that story. Like, I know you went to Rice for a year.
Right.
How did you even find out about Cal Poly? Omar was actually, you know, obviously the assistant coach here at the time.
Right.
How did you even find out about Cal Poly?
Okay, so before Omar came here, he was a coach at Texas State, and so he had like the whole Texas ties thing and everything. He actually. My friend who runs a scouting service in Chicago named Dan Poneman, and then there's another guy who worked me out. His name's Doc, and the two of them had been close. Like, okay, like Doc will bring a guy to work out, and Dan will try to get him to school. And then Omar had known Doc for a while, and he started talking to Dan. So I mean, it was kind of just like a triangulation. You know what I'm saying? They ended up, you know, getting it all figured out. And I remember Coach Lowry told me on the phone. He said, "If you come out here, you'll love it." I was like, "All right, Dan, get me out there." And I came out here and never looked back.
So that was it? Like, you sight unseen? Like, you never... Did you come out to visit?
Yeah, I came out to visit. Yeah, I came out... I think it was, I want to say, June of 2010. Yeah, yeah. June of 2010. Yeah.
And you were already out of Rice by then.
Yeah.
And you're just looking for a new place to go.
Yep, I actually graduated... Because Rice is on semester, so we finished up in May. Okay. So there was, like, that month period where I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I was scared. You know, you're unsure.
What city is Rice in?
Houston, Texas.
Okay, so it's in Houston.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right. Yeah. I always, like, try to picture where exactly, like, Rice is and, like, Baylor. Baylor's up in
Waco.
Right, Baylor's,
yep. Uh-huh. Right. Yeah, so. Texas school systems are strange. I mean, Rice is an interesting thing because it's like it's a nice school in the middle of
Houston.
It's in the middle of Houston, and it's like you're in the middle of like the medical district, and then like it's surrounded kind of like by a nice neighborhood. But if you go too far off, it's like you're in the wrong part, and it's an interesting concept. But I mean, I can tell people I was a resident for a year.
Nice. And you know, speaking of neighborhoods, I read the article that Mustang News, you know, wrote. I think was it JJ or Stephon?
Yeah, JJ.
Yeah, it was a really good article. They're doing awesome stuff with Scroll Kit and some really cool looking website stuff. But I was really kind of taken aback, or not taken aback, but just impressed with you know, some of the stuff that you've gone through. Not to kind of just like, you know, beat the drum with that, but share with us kind of some of the. I mean, there was some stuff in there about kind of where you grew up in Chicago, and what was the neighborhood like there, and tell me about. Tell me about growing up in Chicago.
Well, yeah, I mean...
I'm from Cayucas.
Right?
Help me out.
Well, I thought, like I said, JJ did a great job of capturing it, and we had been working on that all season. And it was just kind of like the where I grew up, where I was actually, you know, born and where I grew up, it was not that nice, you know, for lack of a better phrase. And my parents knew that, you know, and they understood that if I wanted any chance to be successful, we had to kind of get out of that situation. Because, you know, there's nights, you know, you like as a kid, I was being deprived of not being able to go out and play because of like the situation. You know, you got gangs down the street and, you know, anything can pretty much happen.
You don't want to be outside on the street during the
at night. No, not in
or in the evening, even
not probably. In inner city Chicago. No, you do not want to be like that's something that's remained constant even since I've grown up. And it's only gotten worse, which is sad. But it's just a situation that we had to improve, you know. So my mom picked us up, moved us out to a suburb, you know, and I finished up elementary school and it would be funny because it's like my parents are separated. So, I mean, I live with my mom during the week and then I go with my dad on the weekends.
Okay.
So, and during the week, I was in the suburbs, but on the weekends, I was in the city.
You're back in the
I
city.
I was back in the city with my dad, you know.
Okay.
So it was like,
okay.
And he still lived in like that same neighborhood, in that inner city neighborhood. So, I mean, I still got that. It was a perfect blend of like, okay, you go to like, you know, kind of like a peaceful type suburb and then you come back in, you still have all the, you know, wildness.
Yeah, so. I've noticed you kind of, you know, you can kind of, if you follow a team at the college level for long enough, you kind of get an idea about who's close with who.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed you kind of seem like you can float between groups. Do you think that's, you know, as far as being tight with maybe kids who come from the suburbs, mm-hmm. or kids who come from the city, is that something that you probably developed from that kind of back and forth?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my personality I developed from not only my parents, but just my own experiences, you know, and like I said, being able to balance the city and the suburbs. And being able to relate to like kids like Brian, you know what I'm saying? Like Brian's from a suburb of Chicago and I can relate to him just as well as say Malik or, you know, Jamal or, you know, from big city. So it's an interesting contrast, but that's something I pride myself on, is just being able to manage like different publics and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what'd you know about SLO? Like, what was your first impression when you got here?
I remember the very first thing.
Did you fly into the SLO airport?
I did.
Nice.
I did.
I do that all the time.
I flew to the SLO airport and I met Coach Calero. And I remember getting off the plane, and he called me. He says, I'm the good-looking 5'9 Italian guy waiting for you. I said, all right, well, that doesn't sound very Thunder Down Under-ish, but I was like, all right, well, all right, yeah. So I got off, you know, we got in the car, we went to Firestone, and little did I know, Firestone would kind of become my haven for the next few years.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, I knew, like, the tri-tip and everything was good, and Got to hang out with the older guys. Like, I met Lorenzo Keeler, like him, and Chuck, like those guys.
Chuck Anderson.
Big Chuck.
Yeah.
And then, like those guys, they were, you know, good mentors for that weekend. You know, just me being out here and just helping me.
So that was like Joe's first year then.
He
was trying to get, he got transfers, you, Chris.
Right.
Will Donahue, I think, transferred in right around then, if not. Right before, I mean, he got a number of Will Taylor, Amari, like he got all these guys who were kind of established as he kind of tried to establish the program here. Really interesting, kind of looking back on it now in terms of how that kind of the blueprint for that.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, that was something when he recruited me, because he came to Chicago and we sat down at a restaurant breakfast, him and my parents, and we were just talking about like, well, what's the plan for me personally? And you know, he told me, he was like, you're gonna have to sit behind Dave Hansen. He's, you know, two year starter right now.
Right.
And, you know, like you just have to understand that you're gonna have to pay your dues. And I was like, that's fine. You know, as long as I get a fair opportunity when everybody does leave. So, you know, he definitely didn't lie about that. And I was able to embrace what those guys taught me.
Well, and you got minutes your first year. I mean, towards the end of your first year, you were really kind of ramping up those minutes, your sophomore season, which was your first year at Cal Poly. Playing. Yeah. I mean, behind Will Taylor and Hansen, and kind of as that swing guy who could kind of play center then.
I remember the very first game I went against Fullerton, I was playing center, and it was like, here I am, like a 6'7", like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, weird. I had never played center before, because at Rice I was like a 2-3, so it was weird.
Welcome to the Big West.
Exactly, right? But I've learned to embrace that.
Now, Rice is in what conference?
They were in, at the time, Conference USA.
Okay.
So I think
they're in the Big 12 now?
They're in the Conference USA or AAC.
AAC with like Louisville and some of those guys. I think that's what that turned into.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about some of the guys that you met and acclimating in college basketball to a new place, especially coming from a place like Chicago to like a place like SLO.
Right.
You got to be able to like have some people to kind of help you with that transition. Who were some of those guys that helped you as you came in?
From a teammate standpoint,
whoever.
Okay, well, it's actually funny that you asked me that, because I actually just tweeted about this morning my three favorite professors at school that I had, and one of them was Dr. Dan Eller, who's in the journalism department.
So I coached Dan's kid in high school.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm from Cayucas, and went to high school in Cambria.
Okay.
And Luke, who also writes for our site, and Andy also went to high school up there.
Okay.
Yeah, his kid. Played for me, and I was an assistant coach up there. Yeah.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. So Dan Eller, right?
Okay. Dan Eller, he's on there. Brian Greenwood and his wife Jerusha Greenwood in the RPTA department, and a fourth one is Dr. Camille O'Brien. Those four, I feel like, shaped me into the person that I am. You know, because they helped me adjust to, you know, like the whole environment, and you know, like Dr. Greenwood and I, Brian, we share the same love of sports, and he's my advisor for my, you know what I'm saying? So,
okay.
Yeah, he kind of helped
me. For, like,
me,
your major and
exactly,
getting everything.
Yeah, he helped me get my feet wet, and then Dr. Eller helped me with, from a PR standpoint, about how to talk to people and, you know, how to relate different things. Right. But player-wise, you know, like, Will Taylor was my big brother. You know, he was my big brother, and he still is. You know, okay. I look at him like that because him and I spent a lot of time together that redshirt year.
Okay.
Because there were four of us redshirting, and it was, I would hang out with him all the time, and then Amari would hang out with Kyle.
Okay.
So it was like, it was just like they would go do their thing, and we would just be at Pine Creek. Just
and I always pictured Will and Amari, like, because they came from the same place, like being super tight too. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah,
and
they were.
But in terms of bigs and guards,
it was like that. You know, we just literally kicked it and just had so much fun my red shirt year.
Yeah. Will always seems like a fun guy.
Oh, to say the least.
I always wish that he would have gone and played Australian rules football. I know he tried out for it at one point.
He did try for it for a little bit.
Yeah, that was always like going to be like the greatest story ever. Him to become like a legend down there with Chris Eversley. So a lot of the guys that you mentioned kind of being close with, especially at first, were guys who graduated after your junior year and you know, also after your sophomore. I mean, you were close with a lot of those kind of older guys.
Right.
Did you feel like your team needed to re-gel a little bit more this year? And was that maybe something that had to do with the record that you guys had? I mean, I kind of felt like you guys finally found your kind of rhythm as far as, you know, gelling, having good chemistry, better chemistry, because 2 years ago, when you guys lost in the semifinals, the UU Royer class there, you know,
and Chris and Brian and COB,
that team kind of had just this kind of high level of chemistry that you don't really find too often, and that, you know, coaches get like nostalgic for.
Mm-hmm.
This year, it seemed like you guys kind of worked kind of hard and kind of pressed to try to find some of that in terms of, like, even not necessarily even on the court, but you could kind of just, you know, kind of feel like, okay, we're trying to figure out who each other is.
Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate to say?
Yeah. I mean, it took us a while, and, you know, it's, that's one thing that in another one of those, you know, Coach Claro and CE sit down moments, you know, it was, I remember after the season last year when, those three had graduated, he told me, he brought me in, he was like, you know what? I got a task for you. And it's not even having to do with a physical standpoint. It's, I need you to be Chris O'Brien, Dylan Royer, and Drake UU in one person. And I was like, wow, that's big for me, you know, because I lived with Dylan and Kyle at the time. So I'm like, okay, whatever. And Drake and I are obviously cool.
I don't think Drake UU can be Drake UU in one person.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So I'm like, okay, I'm feeling like Multiplicity right now with Michael Keaton. But it was weird. But it was something that he wanted me to do, and something that I felt as though I had to do to kind of like help our program get to that next level.
Now you're talking about from like a teammate perspective, from a personality perspective, or on the court?
Well, I mean, if you look at all three of them had something different, and that's what he
personality
wanted me to,
wise,
exactly.
Right.
He wanted me to encompass that in one person. Like Drake had like kind of a laid back, fun demeanor. Like Drake was very fun to be around. Right. Dylan had like a precision, like a surgeon attack to the game, very cerebral. And Cobb was from the emotional standpoint. He was like
Chris.
Chris.
Yeah.
Chris was the go-to glue guy, the emotional guy. So he was like, yeah, I need you to be all three of those in one person. And if you do that, we'll be successful.
Okay.
So, I mean,
it took you a while. And I would imagine it's kind of leading by example with some of those other guys, you know, maybe some of the younger guys who have to kind of step into that role from a team standpoint, not from an on-the-court standpoint, but from kind of an off-the-court kind of, you know, gelling standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how else to put it. It's kind of an intangible thing.
Yeah.
But I felt like that was something, you know, you guys had more towards the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think one thing that people forget about when you look at this year's regular season was that you guys had coaches that you lost.
Oh yeah,
with Freeman and Omar going, you know, and new coaches stepping in, and you know, you had three new guys on the staff.
Yeah, Coach Lau
in new positions on the staff,
because
Reeves was an assistant coach now, and you had you know, a new DBO who'd been there before, but.
Right.
Anyway, I think that makes a difference too. I don't know.
It does. Like our program was it was wild. Like it was trying to make everything adjusted, you know, because it's like,
and on the fly.
Exactly. Everything was on the fly. You know, you got Coach Fortier coming in, coaching the bigs, and like getting adjusted. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, all right, well, we're really gonna have to like try to make this work, and everybody's gonna have to, you know, realize that it's gonna be hard, and it's not gonna click right away, which it didn't.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you see guys having to make adjustments to whatever styles, you know, the coaches are, and the coaches having to adjust back, and a lot of that stuff too, that kind of goes unseen. I want to kind of switch gears for a second. At the end of the national championship game, okay. It was Napier, right? Mm-hmm. He said that sometimes he goes to sleep hungry,
right?
In college. I asked Sullivan the same thing. Is this kind of a real thing? And you kind of have maybe even a clearer picture being a basketball player. Mm-hmm. Is this a real thing? Like, what was the deal? Did you ever go to bed hungry? Like, what's the story there?
Well,
like,
yeah, I mean, it depends. From what I've gathered about the situation personally, I mean, there hasn't really been like too many like hungry nights per se, you know, but because I have two great parents that, you know, make sure I'm not ever struggling.
Right.
But in his situation, he has a single mother.
Sure.
You know, which sure. plays a huge part in it.
So,
and, you know,
so you, I mean, most guys, what you're saying is most guys kind of supplement with money from home.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't do it on your own. Yeah. It's
okay.
Yeah.
That's the question.
Right. College. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I mean, I'm grateful. I'm pretty sure everybody else is grateful that the NCAA and our schools give us, you like, our scholarship checks, but at the same time, you have to supplement from home. It's not, okay. you know, because you have to pay your rent, you have to pay your utilities. Right. It's not really enough to live off of, and you need that help. So I can understand where he's coming from, right. but I wouldn't say anybody in the Central Coast is, you know what I'm saying, like, in that situation.
Right, sure, sure. Or anybody, like, in the Central Coast, like as far as players, though, right. I mean, players are from all over.
Yeah.
So I mean, somebody could be at Cal Poly in that mm-hmm. situation, potentially, right. if they're, you know.
Yeah, and that, too, I mean, is like another thing that you look at is just from a, I mean, business standpoint is like, you know, you go to certain places in town, and they have student discounts that they can give you on food and stuff like that. You know, right. I'm not necessarily sure how
that they
it
give
is.
To all students.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, it's right. not just to, yeah, no, right. no like, illegal benefits, NCAA, no illegal benefits. But you know, like it's just something that you. I'm not really sure how that is. You know, out on the East Coast, but at yeah. the same time, it's just like it's you need the supplement from the parents.
Sullivan was saying, like, if you wanted a snack, all they could give us was, like, a handful of nuts and, like, yeah. a piece of fruit.
Exactly. So, like, there would be times
like, whatever
on the bus,
you could fit in your
right,
hand
exactly.
or something.
You'd be like, okay, well, they said we're going to have snacks on the bus, right? We get on the bus. We have Clif Bars, waters, a couple Gatorades, and, like, apples and oranges. Yeah. And it'd be like, okay, this is better than nothing. You know what I'm saying? And it's nobody's job to be spoiled, but at the same time, I mean, if you want to throw in, you know, like, a bag of chips somewhere, like, something like
well,
that.
And I mean, for athletes, the one thing that you need is calories,
exactly.
right? And so, you know, Sullivan was talking about getting them from wherever.
Right.
You know, in terms of like, you know, going and trying to kind of stock up on whatever, you mm-hmm. know, same thing with that you said in terms of money from home to,
right.
to get other stuff.
Exactly.
Talks about eating six meals a day. Basketball players during season, I imagine you're eating three
yeah,
or four or five
there.
Meals a day at
exactly.
least. Yeah.
I mean,
you're not trying to put weight on, but
right.
but you're trying to keep it on.
Yeah. So it's like for me personally, when we did that whole health study, I found out that I needed like 4,200 calories a day. So, I mean, I'm not going to get that from a Clif Bar and an apple. So, I mean, it was kind of just like, all right, Mom, Dad, kind of help me out here. I go to the right. grocery store. You know, Jamal and I went to the grocery store a lot of times. We got to get our granola bars and our, you know, Nutri-Grain Chewy bars. And, you know, we made the most of the situation.
Seems like Jamal's a guy who everybody kind of likes.
Oh, yeah.
And I think one of the best quotes I got all year was this year was from Drake
uh-huh.
when he was talking about how Silvestri got found. And he kind of like wrote in like the Jamal, you know, like Driz, who is this kid? Uh-huh. Like something like that. It was really funny. But, you know, you see some of the faces Jamal makes kind of when it's not super serious time.
Right.
He seems like maybe he kind of at some level, steps into that kind of UU role this
yeah.
year, like in terms of just kind of being kind of happy go lucky sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, there's a time with him, you know, he knows when to dial it up. And
there's
he
a sharp side too. I've
oh,
seen.
Yeah. There's a
yeah.
very sharp side. And yeah. I mean, that's something that, not a lot of people, like you said, like not a lot of people see, you know, right. but, you know, he's definitely somebody that helped relieve the pressure big time, you know, because right. it's like he can, like when I'm, you know, trying to focus on certain players, he can take the other group and be like, okay, you know, this is what we need to do, blah, 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 you know, and, yeah. and keep everybody together. And, you know, Kyle's the same way, you know, just being that person that everybody kind of like, you know, likes and, you know, likes to be around because Kyle's
yeah.
funny.
Yeah. 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 The I think he was in the middle of the dancing mm-hmm. pregame.
Oh, yeah. All the time. Yeah. Kyle was always in there.
Yeah. You're from Chicago. What college team did you root for growing up? Was it Northwestern?
I actually rooted for Duke.
Duke.
Duke. Yeah. My email address
you're
was
a Duke
all,
fan.
My email address. It actually still is my email address. I don't know why I've changed it, but it's Blue Devil Hooper.
You don't have to tell at what. But
oh well,
Blue
yeah.
Devil
I mean, I'm not gonna say at what server, but it was Blue Devil Hooper 33. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to Duke. But then as you get older, you're like, oh, you're playing AAU and you're playing against these guys who are going to Duke.
Who are
you're
going
not,
to Duke?
You're not 6'10", 280 coming out of high school, and it's like, All right, I'll just take my mid-major trip.
You got a pretty good school out of it.
Cal exactly. Poly's. Yeah, I'm not complaining. Yeah. I mean, and then we ended up, you know, winning the game in the tournament. So I mean,
that's the way to do it.
We can say that.
Yeah, absolutely. The Northwestern team is one other like random kind of NCAA related thing I wanted to ask you about because you're thoughtful about this stuff. Northwestern is voting, I think I read today on whether to unionize in the football team. What's your thought on that whole thing? I mean, I just feel like it's such an intractable, like there's so much good and bad that would go with both, you know, talking about paying, you know, football and basketball players.
Right.
There's so much good that would come with that in fairness for those football and basketball players. But then there's those other sports
exactly.
that just hang on and that only exist because of those two, you know, kind of revenue sports maybe.
Right.
I just think there's so much good. But I think if colleges were forced to do that, so many of those other sports would just probably perish. Get cut, right. I think. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on on the union thing in general?
Right. Well, I mean, I feel like it doesn't need to be done. You know, you have all these programs that have been in, you know, like in existence for, you know, hundreds of years. And I don't think it doesn't need to happen because in a way I look at it as kind of like, okay, even as a basketball player, like that whole situation I looked at, I was like, wow, that's kind of greedy. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like you're trying to take away from all these other sports and, you know, like.
So you do look at it kind of globally like that.
Yeah.
Now, like the question I always have is, okay, that's what would happen to those other sports. Mm-hmm. But would that just be like the knee-jerk reaction of those administrators or the NCAA saying, I don't want this to happen, so I'm going to make a bad result out of it just to, like, whatever. I mean, that's always the thing that I...
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, it's a mix because in these situations, anything can happen, you know. But it's like I feel like it's something that they want to try to make an example out of, you know. So if it goes to the point where it's up to, you know, like the schools. And, I mean, I know it might get away at Northwestern, you know, because Northwestern's a different type of school, private university.
And it's in the middle of Chicago.
Exactly. You know, it's union, different in that
the
situation.
The union capital of the world,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's a different situation, but I feel like it doesn't need to be done, in my opinion. Oh, okay. I don't feel like other sports should have to suffer, even as a basketball player, as, you know, like a primary sport at a school.
Well, in a place like Cal Poly, I mean, you know, you have a football program here and a basketball program, but then there's also sports that some other Big West teams don't have. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, wrestling and
sand volleyball
right. and you know, some of these other things that that, you know, swimming and diving, not every pack, not every Big West school has. So,
right.
You know, some of these other sports that really depend on some of that, maybe it's kind of an interesting give and take. I don't know that there's like a, I don't know that I have a right answer for that. So let's kind of switch gears back to the season this year because I really enjoyed the last few weeks. So,
all right.
You guys were on like a four game losing streak.
Oh yeah,
the end of conference, and you know, you lost to you know, a team like Santa Barbara the last game. Santa Barbara's a good team. They beat Cal in the preseason. They're legit. Al Williams is amazing. And so, you know, that one wasn't so bad, but it was just this kind of feeling like, oh man, you know, we've just kind of been lagging the last few weeks of the season. Mm-hmm. What was going through your guys' mind in those games? And I remember after a loss that pretty much guaranteed that you wouldn't be like in the top four.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the whole gym was just super bummed. And like, you know, I we come up and we interview you and you know, you're like defiant. You're like, I'm not giving up until this jersey is ripped off my back or some such quote. Well, I mean, you can say that, but what was going through your mind during that time? I mean,
honestly, that's the way I felt because I've realized in a sport where I've seen anything happen, you know, like that's one thing as a sports enthusiast. And, you know, when I learned something when we went to, when we were out on the East Coast, we went to go visit the Pittsburgh Steelers facility. I learned something from this guy that we were talking to, and he was saying, if you love something, then if you love a sport, then you should be a junkie about it. And you should have all this information about it you should be able to be basically a historian.
You should know the history of the sport.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Right.
I like that.
And so I looked at it as, okay, I've seen teams in NCAA, I've seen like 15s take down two, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, sure. Of course the 16-1 never happened. And I, unfortunately,
you wanted to be
right?
the first.
I wanted to be the first. Right. But I mean,
you and Joe.
Exactly. I mean, there's upsets in the tournament all the time, and it's, I mean, I understand that anything can happen. And, it's just a mindset of me being kind of like the wound up leader. Like, I mean, as coach likes to put it, you know, it's kind of like, I had to kind of keep everybody's morale up. And, you know, like I said, I had great support in Jamal and Kyle. And, you know, we just made sure that everybody knew, you know, like it's not over with yet. We know we can beat anybody in this conference. You know what I'm saying? We didn't play all these games at Stanford. We didn't fly across the country twice just to be in this situation. So we knew it was going to pay off eventually.
Right. I mean, it almost didn't.
It almost didn't. Yeah, you're right. After senior night, I feel like we were limping into the conference tournament.
Yeah.
You know? But those 3 days of practice, it definitely changed us. You know, coach turned up the heat, and we just went out with the mindset, you know what, we're going to turn up the pressure on everybody.
So tell me this, because like, and I agree, like, you know, you guys limped into it. I had been traveling a lot for work, and I told my wife, I said, listen, I'm not going to go unless they make it to the finals. Mm-hmm. They're the seven seed, right? Yeah, right. The seven seed. Like, it's cool. Like, I'll watch them on TV. I won't go down. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I got a 6-month-old, 5-month-old at the time. Right. Like, you know, hey, I won't go down unless they go to the finals. Mm-hmm. And come, you know, Friday night, I'm sitting on my computer like, I'm going tomorrow. I'm waking up early and going. Right. Who wants to go? And so, you know, I drove down and back that day. Mm-hmm. So the first game, it was like a 4 o'clock to 1 o'clock
the 12,
game. The noon
the Santa
game.
Barbara game.
That's right. So I went at lunch to Spike's because mm-hmm. it's close to where I work.
Okay.
And, you know, got him to turn the game on. And, you know, it was Cal Poly Pomona against UC Santa Barbara.
Okay, right, of course. Right. The Broncos.
And I was, you know, I was just like, man, somebody's not going to be happy about that. Mm-hmm.
That was me.
Yeah. You and Don and right. all the other people. So, you know, take me through that game. It seems to me, and I could be wrong, and you never want this to be the case, but mm-hmm. it seems to me that the best way to get into a conference tournament is as the number one seed, obviously.
Right.
But if you're going to be a 7 seed, you don't want to be a 7 seed or a 6 seed who's just beaten the team you're about to play.
Right.
Because it's hard to win 2 games in a row against a team, mm-hmm. which happened against Santa Barbara. Neither of you had you won, they won, then you won.
Right.
Against a rival especially, it's mm-hmm. never good to kind of play them right after you've beaten them.
Right.
That's always the point where they're going to be at their best and you might not be.
Right.
So, I mean, and you guys just thrashed them.
Yeah.
what did you guys do? Did Joe I thought to myself, like, did they sandbag last week to try to like to try to like make it? Did they not run the plays that they're going to run now? Did they save some sets for the tournament? I mean, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, the real thing about it is like I can say this now, you know, because the season's over with, but like that senior night game really hurt. You know, it hurt me personally because it's something that we've had pride in over the past couple of years, getting that win on senior night, you know, sending everybody off in the right way. And it hurt me personally, and I know it hurt Jamal and Kyle. So, I mean, we made sure, you know, we were in there with coaching, like, you know what, we need to do this, we need to do all of this. And we actually, to be honest with you, we didn't have any plays, basically. We had 2 actual plays that we ran, and the rest of it was absolute free ball.
In the conference tournament.
In the conference tournament, right. We said, you know what, we're going to play hellified defense, and we're just going to shoot the ball when we're open and take the best shots. And, I mean, the Santa Barbara game, it was funny because I was talking to Coach Lau about it this morning. He was like, I was like, well, what did you think? He was like, well, we lost by 16 at senior night, and then we come out, we're down 7-0 to start the game. You know, yeah. So it was just like, okay, here we go again.
Right.
But, you know, we were able to, you know, lock them down from that point on, turn up the pressure, make everything hard for them. And that was the main thing. And it's, you know, hats off to them. They're a great team. You know, Coach Williams has a great, you know, staff down there. But Alan Williams and I are really close, you know.
Yeah.
So, it's something that, you know, we always go at it. Uh-huh. And it was funny because when I was going under a screen uh-huh. and he hit me with the elbow.
Right.
It was like, I didn't realize I was bleeding at first. But then we went into the locker room. It was like.
Was that in the tournament game?
This is in the first tournament game. Okay, yeah. Uh-huh. So it was.
Because I remember he knocked you down on a. I think it was you on a fast break, senior night.
Uh-huh.
And again, he went and helped you up and made sure you're all right.
Right. Yeah. That was, I mean, that's just pure respect to the game and, you know, right. him being my boy. But, you know, once he hit me with the elbow, it was just like, okay. It was like, it took me a minute to readjust. And then I went back to the locker room and I was getting stitched up during the halftime talk. And I don't know why, but it like flipped a switch. You know what I'm saying? It made me like, oh, okay, here we go. This is
like refocus.
You know what I'm saying? It helped me like go into like an animalistic type thing that I kind of how I wanted to relate to the team.
Yeah.
And they fed on it just as well as I did. So, I mean, we came on that second half and kept them down.
Yeah, it was incredible. And I really felt like the 2 games that you guys won, I think Joel either started or played a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The senior night, you know, I don't think he got a ton of minutes. I don't know what it was about him, you know, getting around and being real long around Al, being able to actually get around him to deny the post. But mm-hmm. I thought that was a big key in those. So you guys beat Santa Barbara, and it's right. like, okay, cool. Like, you right. know, that's
a lot of people thought that was a victory in itself. And they
honestly, I said to myself, listen, if they have to play Irvine in the second round, they beat Santa Barbara in the first round. You know, the season is a, you know, that's how far they've gotten the last year. You know, given the way they played in the regular season, you know, this is would be an okay. Hey, play Irvine tough. Okay, mm-hmm. fine. And you guys came and played Irvine, and that was a closer game. But yeah. but you guys kept shooting really well in the
That's
Honda
what it
Center.
Was. It was yeah. I don't know what it was because in the past years we haven't necessarily had that.
Is it going and playing in the big gyms early on?
I think it might be. I think it honestly was because you had a lot of big gyms with a lot of like you had your depth perception issues to kind of work right. out, and right. we had a lot of practice. You right. know, going to pits in Arizona seemed like you have
and
all
not,
these
and not shooting. I mean, Arizona, you guys shot well, and
but other than that, we didn't shoot that well against those high major teams. Yeah. You know, so it was kind of just like, all right, well. We've been here before. Let's just go out and do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you played CSUN and beat them for a third time, which is, you know, that's a task right there to yeah. beat a team three times. And they were tough that last game. Yeah. That game was super close. Came down to a charge and then a three by a freshman, which is kind of how those things have to go, right?
Exactly. I mean, anything can happen.
Last year it was a tip in from 15 feet. Mm-hmm. So you know the Pacific right. bucket. So you know, that's kind of how those things go. Northridge kind of impressed me this year, even though I saw you guys beat them twice. But you know, just in terms of like the hustle,
yeah,
that coach is intense.
Reggie Theus is very intense. Yeah, him and my dad have known each other for about 20, 30 years.
Okay, so he has some history with your dad. That
yeah,
way,
huh? Right? Like after all the games, I'd always talk to him, and you know, he'd be like, "Well, tell your dad I said what's up." You know, like they hadn't spoken in a while, but yeah. I mean, they talked down at the conference tournament and everything. You know, like they've known each other, so I mean, okay. that's always been
okay.
fun.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, it's interesting that you say the whole beat a team three times thing because Irvine, it was the same situation.
Yeah,
you know, them trying to close
hard,
us out,
man.
It is very hard because yeah. that team does not want to go, especially in that situation. And you know, Northridge, they were an underdog just like we were, and they were actually the underdog of the championship game, even though they were a 5 seed,
right?
Because we had the momentum and everything,
and you beat them twice already.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. I mean,
and I think you know, speaking of Irvine, real quick, you know mm-hmm. that dunk on NJ.
That was the stuff. I appreciate it. Thank you.
That was probably the highlight of the season in terms of just a single play. You know, got on SportsCenter.
Anytime you make it on SportsCenter top 10, you're doing something right. Even though we lost that game.
For sure. So I was lucky enough to get to go see the game in Dayton too. Mm-hmm. And you guys got into that game and kept shooting good. Yep. Kept shooting well. I thought it kind of highlighted what this team kind of what might make a big difference for this team moving mm-hmm. forward, and that's Reese Morgan.
Yeah.
He came out, I think he had 9 or 12 points in that game, mm-hmm. made a bunch of...
Texas Southern, yeah.
Yeah, made some threes. Reese Morgan of 2 years ago when you guys lost in double overtime in Santa Barbara, mm-hmm. double or overtime, one or the yeah. other, he had like 26 or something right. in that game. That's a guy who, if he's anywhere close to that for mm-hmm. an extended amount, and maybe he never will be, I don't know, like injury-wise, but I feel like that's like a... That slot and that player, mm-hmm. like that could be a big difference maker yeah. for them next year in terms yeah. of his ability to be healthy and play like Reese Morgan.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, because you look at Reese and that's what he does. He knocks down shots and he knocks down long shots, you know, and he shoots a very high percentage. And I think he's made a turn for the better, you know, in his career and with his body. You know, he's had his surgery, but he's also had time to kind of relax. So
Surgeries,
exactly. Yeah. You know, so it's kind of like, all right, well, even now, you know, he's out there playing open gym. So it's like, all right, Reese, you know. Like,
dude, stop.
Exactly. Stop, like, do exactly. Like, chill, man. Like, but he's not afraid, which
yeah,
is one thing I can never say. You're
no,
not going to say
be.
About him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, him, I'd say him and probably there for next year coming forward, I'd say there's probably –
You got to see physical improvement with him in terms of just being healthy.
Right.
I think, you know what you're going to get maybe out of like Malik. Mm-hmm. You know what you're going to get out of Dave.
Right.
Mike, I think, started to come on at the end. Mm-hmm. I think Joel's ability to play underneath and
exactly.
kind of take your position too is
right.
going to be huge.
Yeah, he's definitely from me because I look at Reese as being like the mental leader, you know what I'm saying? And
right.
Malik being like the emotional, like rah-rah guy. But right. The X factors for next season, I mean, obviously Reese is going to be an X factor with his health. But also, like you said, Joel, I think Joel is probably the key to the team next year, you know, with his athleticism, you know, there'd be times where I remember, this is the one play I always remember of Joel. He got the ball, or two of them actually. So at home, I think it might've been against Riverside. He got the ball at the top of the key, took one dribble down to the post, rose up right down the middle. I was like, okay. And then at Stanford, he pro hopped into the basket and dunked on a 7-foot. I'm like, all right, Joe, like, this is...
Like, come on.
Right, exactly. Like, this, you see that light bulb start to flicker, and it's bright. Like, it's like, okay, Joe, this is what you're doing.
Joe's probably going crazy. Exactly. Like, I can just do this every game.
And then, Mike is the other one. You know, Mike's ability to not only be, an athletic shooter, but his ability to defend. You know, I think they have a very strong defensive core returning with Mike, Dave, and Alik on the perimeter.
Right. I feel like Mike is your guys' response, if you're going to like think about the rivalry with UCSB, like he's like the Brown or the Bryson.
Exactly.
Like
he's like
a very similar player to those guys.
Like those key role guys, you know what I'm saying?
Who are long and on the wing and who can make shots.
Exactly.
And, yeah, absolutely. So one last question about the tournament, because you guys went and played in St. Louis.
Right.
And you're wearing these green jerseys.
Oh boy.
Yes, and I know I tweeted, I was like, you know, trying to, and I'm sure everybody at Cal Poly was trying not to be like whatever weird about it. Mm-hmm. Wichita had had kind of these Irvine like gray jerseys.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, it was Irvine in their grays, I think, and you guys in your blacks in the Big West semifinal, mm-hmm. right? Which was fine for the Big West semifinal, but for the NCAA tournament, they said it wasn't contrasty enough.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was weird because it's like the black on the jersey, it was too contrasty with the dark green.
So it wasn't you couldn't read it well enough?
Well, yeah, basically that's what the argument was. It was like, you know, it really wasn't that big of a deal. Luckily, you know, we were able to get some more jerseys.
They
turned it around real quick. So, I mean, everybody made the best of the situation, you know.
As a fan who can be superstitious sometimes, I'm like, where's the black jerseys?
Yep.
They can wear them in every Big West game.
Right.
You know, their four-game winning streak was all in the black, and now they're wearing green.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't worn green all year. And now, I mean, not that was the reason why you guys lost, but... You know, I'm looking at these things going, man, don't you want a brand like this cool black jersey that you've been wearing all year? Like, don't other teams get to wear black sometimes?
Right.
Like, I didn't understand it, and I didn't really like it very much. But but like you said, you got some new jerseys quick.
Yeah,
and they looked okay.
Yeah, right.
They looked Cal Poly green.
They got the job done, exactly.
Yeah, it's not like it's that big a deal.
Right.
But it was to me, damn it. No, I'm just kidding. kind of kidding. Can Cal Poly ever be like a consistent NCAA attorney competitor entrant, like, and what would it take for that to happen? I was talking to Luke and Andy, who are, you know, the other knuckleheads that do the site here, and they were talking about, you know, if Cal Poly is going to the tournament or having a chance to go to the tournament as much as any other team in the Big West, then that's like a good thing, because that's like a big first step.
Right.
But like, what are I guess my question, I think I know the answer. Like, are you guys on the right track to do that as a program?
Yeah, I think so, because we not only the guys returning, but the guys coming in. You know, Alex Abrams, big kid from down south, Trevor John, and Kyle Tofu was actually out here this past weekend.
Yeah.
You know, three solid guys, and I think they're looking, you know, they might be looking for a couple more. So, I mean, it's kind of just like, all right, well, they definitely have the returning nucleus, and that nucleus is only going to grab the new guys and, you know, teach them the way.
Yeah, so when I was in college at UC San Diego, my roommate was on the basketball team, and so I recognized those guys pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking up Trevor John highlights, and they were interviewing his coach, who's named Nick Jones, and he's a guy who went to UCSD. He was on the team down
really?
When I was in school, so it was like, it made me feel really old. So I'm like, dang, man, that guy's like the coach of the year up there. I think his team went undefeated, Trevor's team.
They won a state championship.
Yeah, they won CIF. Give me a good Joe Calero story.
Oh boy!
I told Drake and Dylan to give me one last year, and they gave me a couple of good ones. But and you don't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, anything bad or anything.
Oh no, I'm trying to think. There's some. He has some good ones.
Because he talks about being weird.
Yeah,
and that's okay.
He's very strange. Which is one reason why I think we got along so well. Because I'm weird in my own regard. But him and I, we definitely click differently. Yeah. But I'm trying to think.
While you're thinking about it, why is being weird good?
Because it's not conventional, you know, and if you, you know, why go with the grain? You know, everybody's done that. You know, if it's one thing that I like to, you know, think about is like, if it's so easy, everybody would do it, you know, and if you're unconventional and weird and you have a quirk about you.
And I wouldn't have thought it about a lot of other coaches, but like when you guys lost that game in Santa Barbara and then you came back and beat them by like 30, I'm like, dude, he held something back in that senior night game. Because he would, like that, and not in a bad way, just like he would be scheming all year to think about
Yeah, he's definitely that type of guy to scheme all year and have stuff in the back pocket, you know. Yeah. But like I said, we just kind of, you know, we came to him and he came to us and we were like, you know what, let's just play basketball. You know, like man-to-man defense, you go guard him and take it personal. That was literally our mindset. And, yeah, that's something that really worked out for us.
Yeah, it's got to feel good, right?
It does.
Like, you know, satisfying.
Yeah, it's weird because it's like we went out and played those tournament games and it was like, not saying that we had restrictions on us, but I mean, it's kind of like, okay, you go out here and, you know, if you simplify it to where it's just like, I have this guy and I'm responsible for him locking him down and just making it literally individual matchups within the game itself. Right. It turned into something that's so much more fun and exciting because it's like, okay, oh, he just scored on me. So that means I got to go back and set somebody up or score myself, you know? So
I read an article or quote by the Hawaii coach, Gib Arnold, uh-huh. about playing more guys during the season, you know, so tired at the end of the year.
Right.
And I thought to my, you know, I just thought about like, you know, success breeds copycats too. Mm-hmm. Not that he's copying, you know, Cal Poly or whatever, right. but you guys played a ton of guys
yeah.
all year, especially even into the beginning of conference. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe other coaches see that and say, man, Cal Poly was super fresh in the tournament and that's what we want to be mm-hmm. next year and do that. I think that's just super interesting.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's something that definitely worked. That's something that we talked about during the season is like how I think I want to say he used the 1996 Kentucky team or some team.
Jamal Mashburn.
Yeah, it was some team he brought up from the 90s.
Ron Mercer.
Exactly, that crew. And he was just saying, like, they had 11 guys on that team.
Eventually, you were like four.
Right. Just hanging out. I don't even know what was going on. But, like, that team had, like, 9 or 10 guys go to the NBA, yeah, you know? Yeah, so it's kind of, kind of reminiscent of, like, kind of the Clippers. I feel like the Clippers right now have 11 guys who could start on an NBA team, you know? Right. So it's I like their depth.
So they're fresh, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're fresh. And then when you sub those first five out, you still have guys coming off the bench. And that's where I feel like we kind of, you know, helped in that aspect this year.
Yeah, yeah. You're so Claro story.
Oh, the Claro story. Okay. I'm trying to think.
You can keep it G-rated.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing terrible. I'm just trying to think. It's hard to like pinpoint. It's something I can tell you. Like,
yeah, tell me what it's like to have Joe as your coach.
Okay. Well, he's very demanding.
Okay.
And that's one thing that I've noticed is because outside of he takes his point guards very seriously because he was a point guard. You know, so he was the absolute hardest on Amari. He was the absolute hardest on Drake and Jamal and Malik. And it was weird because I felt like I was in that same group. But from a different position. You know what I'm saying? So it was kind of like, he told me at the beginning of the year,
he lumped you in with those guys, exactly. Even though you weren't a point guard.
Even though I wasn't a point guard, right. So he right. told me, he was like, you know what?
That's a compliment.
It is. Yeah. And I mean, it's something that I took, you know, to heart. And he honestly said, you know, like, I'm going to give you a full tank of fire this year. Like, I'm going to keep yelling at you and yelling at you, you know, trying to elevate your game. And we're going to keep going until, you know, the season's over with. And, you know, it's just kind of like, all right, I understand that. And it was like, even after the tough games, you know, we go in there and watch film. He was like, well, what the hell were you thinking when you did that? You know what I'm saying? I'm just like, oh, I know. And I'm just like dragging and we're in 4-game losing streaks. But now it's just like, I look back and I'm like, wow, you know, like it really helps, you know, because it's like, when you look at stuff tactically, it's like, okay, well, 2 weeks ago, I misread that screen and I didn't come off of it right. And that's why he was in my face to contest the shot. Where it's not like, oh, okay, jab, you know, show a little fake and then pump fake. Okay, you over there, dish off.
You have the next thing to do.
Exactly. You know, right. So, I mean.
And it's because he demands that kind of excellence.
Right.
He
demanded it at such an accelerated rate. That was the main thing. Like, it's one thing to demand perfection, which he did of me my junior year, but he just said senior year, I'm going to turn it up.
Is that a Cal Poly thing, the accelerated rate thing? I mean, you know, a lot of grads at Cal Poly would like to say, you know, hey, it's a great academic
right.
institution, you know, especially for, you know, it's on par with, you know, the UCs
right.
and better in a lot of places like engineering mm-hmm. than a lot of them, and really just a great school. But I always wonder, you know, in terms of the balance, and you don't always have a balance between, you know, it's not always like, ooh, you have a super athletic team or a super smart. You know, it doesn't have to mm-hmm. be one or the other. But sometimes you see a lot of guys, a lot of Dylan Royers,
right.
you know, who are sharpshooters, who are really smart about the game,
uh-huh.
Who maybe do learn at that kind of accelerated rate. Is there anything to that? terms of the guys around and just being around smart guys.
Yeah, the type is basically
not that anybody else is dumb, but you know, I'm not trying to go there. But you know, being around a lot of smart guys has to make a difference at some point.
Yeah, it does, and it's a testament to like the type of people Coach Claro recruits. You know, he brings in people that he can trust, A, and then B, people he thinks he can play and learn within the system. And, you know, and to learn in the system, you have to be, you know, like you have to be accelerated. You know, you have to be able to learn very quick and on the fly because the matchup zone that we ran is not easy.
Right.
You know, and it took me a while. It took me like basically a year and a half to learn.
Well, I think this year's team was still learning it by the end of the year.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so it got to the point where it was just like, you know what, it's not working. So let's just throw it out.
Right. Interesting. A couple more questions. One is, you know, Jordan Lewis is in Israel.
Uh-huh.
I think he's in the semifinals of the league over there. I read the other day. Dylan's played down in Mexico.
Uh-huh.
Drake won the Australian
the
championship.
NBL championship.
Yeah. Did you watch the highlights from that?
Yeah, I saw the highlights.
I wrote a fun post about it. Uh-huh. But I love hearing the Australian announcer just get crazy about like James Ennis dunks because they're not super used to it at all. You know, and you know, that's just super fun. And like Christina Santiago even was the Bulgarian MVP last year, and she ended up back there this year. And I think they're in the finals like right now, I think, as we speak.
She is dominant.
She's amazing. Just seeing those guys and having all those players having success from Cal Poly overseas, A, does it help you maybe if that's the direction you're going? And does it like kind of give you like, I guess, role models to follow in terms of doing something like
that? It's big. I mean, because I talk to those guys all the time. Because, I mean, one thing that, I mean, a lot of people may not know is I lived with Dylan, I lived with Cobb, and I lived with Jordan Lewis for two years. And I lived with him while we were all at our house a couple years, or before this year, actually.
Right.
And, you know, like being able to just talk to them, I talk to them pretty regularly. I talk to Drake all the time now.
Right.
And, it's kind of just like, all right, well, if I have a question about something in terms of professional basketball, whether it be about contracts, whether it be about countries, I can go to, you know, any one of them and just be like, all right, well, you know, I want to know about this. And they'll tell me straight up. And I'm like, all right, cool. Well, I mean, I don't have to worry about them because I know like a lot of people like probably like I don't say a lot of agents are liars, but I mean, they kind of fabricate things sometimes. So
can tell you what you want to hear.
Exactly. And they tell you what you want to hear and it's a business, you know, so you use them and they use you. And it's kind of just like, all right, well, I want an honest opinion. So I'm going to ask people who are there or who've been there. So I mean, it's something I can ask my dad about. But then again, he hasn't played in, you know what I'm saying?
Right,
so,
right.
But
it's been 20 years. Exactly. 30 years,
being able to ask them is definitely huge.
So like it sounds like you're kind of using that network. Like there's kind of, and not that there wasn't, but there's like a network now of former Cal Poly basketball players, guys who've played for Calero especially, who've gone overseas and played, you know, even like Ryan Darling, Will Taylor, you know, guys who've had that experience at some level, who you can kind of tap into at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's almost like a niche that Cal Poly kind of has in terms of, and maybe at some point you become well known as a university who produces good players. Whether they're, you know, professionals in the NBA or professionals somewhere else, there's something to that too, right?
Yeah, there is. I mean, it's definitely something that, you know, Coach Clay has done well for this program, and it would have been a lot more players if bodies weren't tired. You know, like I'm pretty sure Dave Hansen could have went somewhere and made a lot of money. You know, Chris O'Brien would have absolutely played somewhere if his body would have held up.
I would talk to him.
Right.
He's like, man, I just want to put a jersey on.
I talked to him. I'm going down there to see him tomorrow. So I'll be in SoCal with him, and he wants to work out on Saturday.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, he's got a little workout thing going on.
His little Cobb fit.
Cobb fit, yeah.
There it is. A little plug for you, Cobb.
I love it. Cool. So last thing, and you saw Drake's step back three, right?
I did. It was a very Kevin Durant-ish on the range he had.
It was like a jump back.
It literally was a jump back.
It was crazy. And, you know, that's a guy who really, you know, when he was a sophomore and junior here, you know, he wasn't shooting the ball from the outside ever. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, I think that's a testament to like developing that part of your game.
Right.
I think that's a role model for guys to follow as well, you know, when it comes to like developing that outside jumper. You know, you see guys who don't. It was at least a threat his senior year, and he's made himself into a, I don't know, 30-35% shooter probably from long distance in Australia at the pro level, which is pretty cool. So you're leaving Cal Poly here pretty soon.
I am.
And is it fair to say that you might be having to learn another language next year? Is that kind of ideally?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I actually have an app downloaded on my phone and that teaches me different languages. So, I mean, it's something to have, but I mean, it's something I've been wanting to do for a while because, I mean, I learned Mandarin Chinese in high school. So, I mean, that's kind of like my second language.
Okay.
And
you speak Mandarin?
I do speak Mandarin. Not as fluent as I used to, but I have the basics down.
Yeah, not a lot of chances to practice in slow.
Exactly, right. But, yeah, probably. You know, like, it's whatever happens. I just want to go somewhere and play and be happy, you know, and be able to provide for my family. So that's the next step.
Okay, cool. And being that you're kind of leaving now, like, what advice have you given to younger players? I know you and Ridge were on, like, CJ Silas' show earlier, kind of like a senior and a freshman. Right. It's kind of a fun story that way. But, you know, there's an interesting group of, like, freshmen and sophomores last year with, you know, Joel and Ridge and Zach Gordon and Brian Bennett and some of these guys who are just coming into their kind of more prime years in college.
Right.
What advice do you give guys like that? And like I said, it seems like you're a guy who's kind of maybe gets along with everybody and it seems like pretty tight with everybody maybe. What advice have you given guys like them?
Well, I mean, it's not easy. You know, and it kind of goes back to what we were just talking about how these guys are going to play overseas and like how people have developed. Is we know we're not going to get number one draft picks at Cal Poly, but we can make you professional basketball players. So you're going to have to work at it, though. And it's a lot of hard work. You make yourself a pro. You know what I'm saying? You're not born a pro. So unless you're, you know, seven foot whatever. And you know what I'm saying? But
I mean, it's Sean Bradley.
Exactly. Unless you're Sean Bradley, you're just there. But it's kind of just like, all right, like I told him it's not easy. And the best thing that I think that could have happened for this team, especially with it being so young, was us making it this year, because it makes them realize that you see how hard this was. You see how many losses and how much stuff we had to go through just to get here, and that you have to work twice as hard to get back. Because if you look at the rest of the conference, is getting better literally daily. I'm hearing about people leaving, people coming in. I'm just like, wow.
Yeah. So Fullerton picked up a 6'11 guy yesterday, I read.
Exactly. Yeah. And Northridge has who knows who with Reggie Diaz at the helm. You know, they probably have transfers
all over the place. I just think that's so – I mean, the coaching in this conference during the time that you were there even, you know, as far as just names and guys who have experience doing – I mean, Les up in Davis and, you know, Theus coming in and Russell Turner and Irvine.
Even,
I mean,
what's his name? Bob – the guy from Pacific.
Thomason.
Yeah.
He was a coach for a long time.
Yeah, he was. And then he had Michael Olo. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like, wow. Like, this, I didn't realize how long he was there until last year when I started hearing about it. But, I mean, I think, you know, Coach Cleo is definitely next in that list.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just saying, like, and Joe's there too, obviously. I mean, I guess I skip him but I'm thinking of other coaches, you know, in the conference. This is a conference with a lot of good coaches, and Joe, I think, is the second most tenured behind Bob Williams at this point. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an interesting thing to think about too, is that he's only been there for 5 years now.
Right.
So that's kind of a fun thing as well. Yeah. Well, Chris, so like, what's your timeline? Like, what are you trying to do in terms of knowing? I mean, a lot of like Drake's season just got over, so you're in the off season with a lot of these teams right now. The beginning of the off season, so. Maybe not thinking about, you know, anything certain for a few months? Is that kind of how this is looking?
I mean, I'm basically...
Knowing what's going on, what's your timeline?
So, like, my agent and I talked about it, and the NBA executives, they got back from Portsmouth, like the scouts and stuff last week, or this past Monday. And they said, I told them, I was like, all I want you guys to do is just make sure all the doors here are closed before, you know, we go overseas.
Great.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's what they're doing now, you know, trying to talk to here, seeing if it's realistic. And I mean, people have told me it's realistic. You can make a summer league team. You might be able to, you might get a workout, you know, so it's kind of just like, all right, well, why not?
If you got an opportunity with like a D league team or something like that, would that be a preferable to like going somewhere maybe, or it's kind of like you just have to see. I mean, like you said, you want to make sure all the doors here are closed first, right?
Yeah, like I can understand if you get drafted and then they send you down to a D league team, but at the same time, I mean, the D league pay scale is pretty low, right?
But even compared to like probably like Israel or
exactly,
somewhere like that.
Yeah, you know, you can go over to Israel and make like probably $70,000-$80,000.
Now here's a question, because I like Jordan has like Israeli heritage, Dylan has Mexican heritage, Drake has Australian heritage. Uh-huh. You know, where can we get you from here?
America. I'm an import anywhere I go. I'm not
so,
getting
so you exactly. got it. So that makes it a little harder though.
It does. But at the same time, it makes it. I love the pressure of that because as an American, when you go somewhere, they want you to perform.
Totally.
But then it also means they're going to pay you a little bit more money.
Okay,
so, I mean, I'm not complaining at all.
And
that's something that, I mean, Coach Calero has helped me with over the past 4 years. And he's made sure he's put me in enough tough positions to where this seems like nothing. You know, like you go out overseas, you know, you're playing in front of, or in Drake's case, you know, thousands of people. Yeah. And it's like, we've been in enough big arenas.
I think the Perth Wildcats have more season ticket holders than the Indiana Pacers. Somebody told me.
Yep,
that is crazy.
Yep,
that is insane.
It is.
Well, Chris, you know, wherever you end up, you know, we'll definitely stay in touch, and good luck with your future. I'm sure
I appreciate it.
I'm sure it'll be bright.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fans Blueship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansblueship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up, don't bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to Trouble Town. I can't find my way around Trouble Town. Town. You made the front page of the news.